Senator Kevin Cramer is here. This is the Talk Radio Town Hall. It is a blessing of blessings to have a United States Senator taking calls, questions, and comments from anyone and everyone about any issue that you're concerned about every single week on our radio, and we appreciate the time that he devotes to us and other media honoring the good people of North Dakota with his service in the United States Senate. Good morning and welcome back, Kevin.
Good morning, Scott. It's funny, as you're talking, you're saying that, I'm thinking, boy, am I glad I get to be on Scott's show and not looking forward to returning that call to Maggie Haberman this afternoon. New York Times.
Yeah, I was going to say, Maggie Haberman, for folks that don't follow the TikTok of the media, is like the ice queen of journalists. Yes. She is, woo! So what is she hot on the trail on? What's the big story they're working today, the old New York Times?
Okay, so this is really funny that you asked this question, because this is a little inside view of how it all works. Now, I know Maggie. She calls a lot. She texts me, just like Scott, just so you all don't think Scott's that special. Every reporter in New York and Washington also has my cell number. Something I may regret at some point. But anyway, she texts me and asks if we could talk this afternoon. I haven't gotten back to her, which is usually, often the case. And when they don't tell you what they want to talk to you about, it's usually a setup. So I say it as I chuckle, probably will return it anyway, because my curiosity gets the best of me, and I always enjoy a good sabotage. But anyway,
there you go. It's Father's Day weekend, and Kevin is being Dad of the Year. Following young Abel around to what is Abel doing? What is his soccer like an elite squad that goes everywhere, right?
Well, it's the Olympic Development Program. So we're in Indianapolis right now, Chris and Abel and I, and Abel is on the Dakota team. So that North and South Dakota have a joint sort. It's sort of an all-star team. There's tryouts throughout the year, and we go to Aberdeen a lot because that's where the Dakota team headquarters. So we go there a lot on weekends and for training and tryouts. Anyway, so this weekend is like a regional tournament here in the Midwest, I guess you'd say, in Indianapolis. By the way, Indiana itself is a very hot spot for soccer in the United States, particularly collegiate soccer and youth soccer. So anyway, we're here this weekend. I think we play Wisconsin, an Ohio team, and I'm going to forget the other one. Indiana. I guess we play Indiana.
I heard a rumor. I could be wrong, but I heard a rumor that the inspiration for the weekend games was going to come from Carson Wentz. I don't know if that's true or not, but I just heard a little rumor.
That would be... I don't know about that. But anyway, in American football, soccer players are only good for kickoffs and field goals. So you just never know.
Well, anyway, let's get to it, folks. Your questions, your comments. Welcome for Senator Cramer. I want to talk about drought early on. And Walter and Hope is also wanting to share some stories related to our drought situation right now. Walter, you're on with Senator Kevin Cramer. Go ahead.
Hello, Kevin. Kevin Walter Grotti up here near Hope. Say, I had the thought here.
Hi, Walter.
Hi. Say, I had the thought. I work with a lot of grain bins, and last week I was out by Garrison, North Dakota. It's so dry out there, their crops didn't even come up. I thought, what a mess it is. And here we drive across the Garrison Canal to get out New Rockford. And they stopped the Garrison diversion right there. What is wrong with our politicians? Right. They need to have their tail twisted. Like we used to be loading cattle in a truck. You'd twist the cow's tail and she'd jump into the truck. And somebody's going to have to twist some tails and get that thing finished. Because there's drought all the way across North Dakota.
Yeah, so interesting story there, because, of course, that diversion, that canal... is, of course, the beginning of the Garrison diversion, which was promised to North Dakota at the time that the Garrison Dam was built. And, of course, at some point, some politicians back in the 70s and 80s, and our dear, now departed friend, the great Mark Andrews, was the architect of Garrison diversion and never got to see it to completion. I'm not sure we ever will. We certainly won't see it to completion in an above-ground movement of water from Lake Sakakawea to Eastern North Dakota for the type of use that Garrison Diversion was designed for, and that is to disperse Missouri River water throughout Eastern North Dakota for multiple uses, municipal, largely industrial, as well as, of course, irrigation. But there is, has been movement now in recent years as we've sort of reignited and twisted the cow's tail, if you will, to move water in a couple of ways. Maybe some from the canal, but an alternative being to pipe it out of the Missouri River itself, because there are jurisdictional questions or differences between the actual, the Missouri River itself and then the reservoirs, and it gets into a lot of politics. Okay. But not surprisingly, Scott, and Walter knows this, but the real issue was the extreme environmental movement, not last decade, but 3 or 4 decades.
Yeah, and, Mark Andrews would tell an incredible story about his good work being undone by, a cabal of Dorgan and Pomeroy and Roger Johnson, and he puts a lot of that on, a Democratic, bit of patience towards that extreme environmental community you're talking about, which is sad. Here's how I see it. It's a promise. It's a promise. Go ahead, Walter.
Yep. Yeah, just a minute. I'm sitting here with a Trump cap on in my shop, and I remember way back in Kennedy days, he came through Grand Forks. I'm old enough. I'm 80 years old. I remember he was bragging about this Garrison diversion, and we were going to get water all over North Dakota. So the Democrats were helping get it done, too, and I don't know who stopped it.
Oh, yeah. In those days, you didn't have the type of movement that came, a decade or two later that stopped it. So between the executive branch and, the federal bureaucracy working with environmental extremists, what you didn't have for a while there was you didn't have Mark Andrews, and you didn't have the champions on the side of North Dakota's farmers and North Dakota's communities and the state, frankly, to really fight against it. Now, whether they would have prevailed or not is hard to know, but they really didn't put up an effort, as we know. Now, I want to jump ahead a little bit. So we do know that there are new efforts now to do some of that. It's certainly going to be scaled down from what the promise was, and there's still, some of that water gets to various places. Some of it's used. Some aquifers are used for irrigation, as we know. We're making some progress in some other areas south of I-94 along the Missouri. But the other good thing is that in recent farm bills, we've been able to implement a crop insurance program so that while the crop may not grow, at least the farmer with these higher commodity prices there are today will be able to at least have a reasonable payment. But
let me ask Walter real quick before we let you go. How would you pay for it, Walter?
I would go to that legacy fund in North Dakota, have some money enough to finish it themselves and forget about the federal government.
All right, I want to talk about the price thing when we come back, and more on drought, too, with Senator Kevin Cramer. Your calls, questions, and comments, welcome. So to finish on the suggestion from Walter related to building the Garrison Dam, fulfilling the promise of the federal government decades old, what is the price tag on that? What is the rough numbers on that?
Yeah, I have no idea what the price tag today would be. And, obviously a lot more than it would have been had they done it in the first place, but now what you're talking about is if a state-funded project. Even at that, however, there are obviously federal nexus as you cite these things and permit various things. Anyway, so I don't remember off the top of my head, Scott, what the price tag is, but I do think there's a chance that we get the diversion of Missouri River water to the eastern part of the state. But it's going to be much more modest than what the Garrison Diversion was designed to be. But at this point, given a binary choice, obviously we have to do something. And the state, the state does have the wherewithal to be able to do that. But to me, I do think the seriousness of doing something with Missouri River water out of the channel itself, the river itself, and again, this gets into wonky jurisdictional issues, whether it's federal issue or state issue, the reservoirs become, not necessarily the property, but under the management of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, is that if it's serious, then it's going to happen anyway. Then the moving water from one watershed to another watershed, across the continental divide, those are big international and national issues. If it's going to happen anyway, maybe you get the federal government to become a little more reasonable about, taking the water out of the original canal, because it would be much shorter. The distance from the canal to, say, the Cheyenne River, or you know, get into another system that gets it to the eastern part of the state would be much better. But anyway, all that said, we've also worked on some legislation that I think has at least a fighting chance if we can get it onto some sort of other legislation that would provide a lower rates, electric rates, in an area south of the I-94 corridor.
The ripple effect on that would be big for sure. I'm going to keep going here.
It'd be really big. Yeah. Lots of that stuff. But I also wanted to raise, because since you raised the drought, particularly as it relates to ranchers, Scott, you know that Senator Hoeven and Congressman Armstrong and I did send a letter to Secretary Vilsack this week that requesting emergency haying and grazing on CRP acres prior to August 1st. And the reason we say August 1st is that's the end of what's considered the primary nesting season, which is the, you know, during which time you're not allowed to hay CRP. Anyway, so it gets wonkier than that, but trying to find all the relief we can for our ranchers who have been, as you know, Scott, you know as well as probably more than any other person who's not in the business of ranching themselves, how many hits our ranchers have taken in several years.
Yeah, it's just flat awful. And now they're playing ridiculous prices for feed per head, just off the charts. And then they've got crops in the ground that obviously aren't going to be there. And you got, again, federal restrictions that don't allow them to use even what obviously isn't going to be there because of risk management, you know, crop insurance rules. It just breaks my heart. So if there's anything that can be done, you have some ideas. That's what the show is for. Tim Larimore, you're next for Senator Kevin Cramer. Go, Tim. Tim, are you there? Okay, let's go to Austin. Austin in... Where's Austin from, Kev? All right. It will go to Eric in Fargo. How about that? We're just going right down the list here. 800-228-0550. Eric, can you hear us? Are you there?
I can hear you fine, Scott.
Go ahead for Senator Cramer.
Hey, Eric.
This is Master Sergeant Martz, by the way. Senator Cramer, I got a couple little things. I got a couple little things on our national defense and our national security. I'm very, very concerned about the cuts being made to the Department of Defense. The Marine Corps has had to give up their M1 tanks, all their armor, and they're moving Marines over to the Army side, trying to and they're losing some of their artillery pieces as well. It's very concerning. And then the other thing is that I just listened to this admiral. Well, I heard it on the Mark Levin show on the flag here. But with his required suggested reading for all the naval personnel on critical race theory, this crazy book. And I kind of know how this suggested reading goes. It's like involuntary volunteerism, you know, like we're not just, you will read it. So I would just like to bring that to our citizens' attention and get your thoughts on it, being you're on the Armed Service Committee. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Eric, for that, and thanks again for your service, as always. So he raises 2 points. One, he raises the issue of cuts. Just to give people a basic sense, this year's budget that came from the president several months late, I might add, is an increase in the Armed Services budget of just very little. It's a 1.6% increase. But that 1.6% increase, which is $715 billion, for those of you keeping track of the dollars and cents, in a 2% inflationary scenario, which is where we are, is actually becomes a cut in terms of the dollars. Now, Eric's talking about, sort of what's happening with each of the services themselves now that you have to reprioritize and they're trying to do some consolidation. You'll never get a 4-star general, and I had two of them in front of me yesterday. The Air Force and Space Force generals, chiefs, they're both, on the Joint Chiefs of Staff. They're never going to say the administration's absolutely wrong on this stuff. Whether it's the Marine Corps, for the Navy, there's a destroyer that's been cut from the budget. The destroyer's a $2 billion major, obviously, piece of equipment and ship that carries a big weapon system.
Senator, hang on if you would. We're up against that break. We'll let you finish that answer when we come back. And Eric, stay tuned too. Other calls, welcome. What's on your mind? Before we return to this topic of national security, You, Kevin, like me, have lost your dad. What do you most remember about your dad? I always think of the lineman. I think of your office in the Capitol when you're a Public Service Commission member and literally a part of a power pole sitting there with your dad's helmet and everything else. But tell me a quick story about your dad.
Yeah. He had his hard hat, his climbing hooks, his belt. Yeah, great memorabilia. I still have all of that, of course. Here's my one. I don't know if it's my favorite dad story, but it's a really important one these days. I was a middle schooler, whatever that was back then. We didn't call it middle school, but I'm going to say I was around 12, 13 years old. We were at my grandparents' house. My mother asked me something or suggested something, and I gave a smart aleck response. I was in that age where you start, testing the limits a little bit. My dad came around the corner from the other room, and liberals, plug your ears because you're going to hate this. And he came around the corner so fast, directly at me, and my dad was not a big guy, but he had a hold of my shirt collar. I was pinned against the wall with my feet about 6 inches off the ground with his forearm in my chest. And he said, don't you ever talk to your mother like that again. And as I reflect on that moment of great embarrassment in front of my cousins and uncles and grandparents, I thought, I learned two lessons. One, never, ever talk back to your mother. And two, the most important person in his life was not me. It was my mother. And that just spoke volumes to me about the family and the importance of a marriage and just that commitment. So anyway, that's probably I don't know if it's my favorite, but it's certainly one of the most, important lessons I ever learned from my dad.
Man, speaks volumes. And that, it's just amazing how that one event lives on still to this day, however many years later. That's what's so just phenomenal. Linda in Fergus Falls said, my father's been gone most all of my adult life, died from cancer of the appendix, metastatic cancer of the appendix. Unfortunately, alcohol abuse part of his life, and so there are many painful memories, but some positive memories are fishing. He loved pan fishing, also played cribbage. I learned how to play cribbage from him. Love that story, Linda, and I got a MindPillow prize coming your way. I talked about my dad, and alcoholism was part of, our family and everything, and, Kevin, you've talked openly about that as well, and losing a son, and this is something I think people can, say, my dad was who he was because of his dad. That certainly was the case with my dad. His dad was an alcoholic. His mom was an alcoholic. And, he could never fight that demon as well. And, don't be ashamed of that. Talk about that. Talk to your kids about that. Know that there's, things genetically that happen there that you got to worry about. No family's perfect, for crying out loud, right? So, that shapes us.
But the best part of all of it is that if you do just what you're talking about, those bad experiences are what breaks the chain going forward, and that we do not have to, we're not confined to the problems of our history, but we're hopeful about the promises of eternity.
So true. All right. So back to a budget situation.
So back to the $715 billion budget.
Yeah.
So we are right now having, a couple of hearings a week on the budget for the various services. And, so Master Sergeant Martz talked about a very specific situation regarding the Marine Corps and some being shifted from one place to another. So what does happen, though, is there's an unfunded priority list, unfunded priorities that include things like I started talking about a $2 billion warship, a destroyer, that got cut. So when you cut a $2 billion destroyer, this has a lot of effects. First of which is the industrial complex, that is to say the shipbuilders who rely on long-term contracts to make sure they keep costs down, that they have the personnel they need, that they have the steel and all the things they need. That gets all screwed up because you now have placed uncertainty within their certainty. The second thing you have is we're going to have to pay a $33 million penalty for a ship that's not going to be built because we breached a contract. Okay, we still have to set priorities, right? So the unfunded priorities come before the committee. They're listed in the budget request by the various services, and some of these things will be corrected, whether it's a change in priorities by the policymakers, an addition. But here's the other little secret, Scotty, that I think everybody in this audience would care about. The long-standing practice in budgeting has been that whenever the discretionary budget is increased, and now that's not the mandatory, but the discretionary budget, of which, by the way, defense is half, the tradition's always been that if you raise the whole budget $1 billion, then you raise, you know, non-military half a billion and military half a billion. In this president's budget, the discrepancy between the increases is $40 billion. In other words, they're adding $40 billion more to the discretionary budget on the non-military side than they are on the military side. And that just shows a totally screwed up set of priorities, because we won't have anything to spend that non-discretionary money on if we don't make sure that our country can defend itself against very aggressive, fast-growing, near-peer allies like China, Russia, and then, of course, some of the other minor players like North Korea and Iran who
China's not debating cuts to its military. How many ships are they building?
You got that right.
It's ridiculous.
Ridiculous. They over 400, and we're down to under 300. Our goal, the strategic plan is to get to 355 in the United States Navy. That will take very, very long. But they're building them. So is Russia, by the way. Russia is building these more submarines. They're building these icebreakers because of the role of the Arctic. That really brings a lot of, again, Grand Forks into play. Scott, we could do a whole afternoon just on the role of the future role of North Dakota's military bases in the global fight on for freedom on any given day. But you're exactly right. They don't debate this stuff. Now, let me just add one other thing, because I don't want people to be scared to death, but I do want them to know how serious, especially the China threat, is. They do it faster than we do. They do a lot more than we do. They don't pay their people. Our largest expense in our military is paying our men and women. Obviously, China and Russia don't have that problem. They just tell you have to do it. But they don't do it as well as we do. They're not as lethal. They're not as technologically advanced. But they're catching us quickly, particularly in space and with hypersonics and things like that. But generally, they're about a year and a half behind us in technology. So we've got a lot of work to do.
Of all the things we squabble about, of all the things that keep us up at night about where we are, and how we got there, if you don't see a $64 trillion budget plan from the Biden administration that does not increase military enough to keep up with inflation, nor national homeland security, but does massive increases in everything woke, you don't see that as a true threat, especially when it comes to our national security, you are whistling past the graveyard. Eric, thanks for the call. Hope you got your answer there on national security. Let me go to Lyle in Fargo next for Senator Kevin Cramer. Lyle, go ahead.
I just wanted to share an old story about my dad.
Tell us about your dad, Lyle.
He was a World War II veteran. Didn't talk about it much. The one thing he did mention when he was returning after the war was over, his luggage got lost, including all of his medals. To make a long story short, my niece and her daughter, as a school project, got her teacher and their congressman involved, and they went to the Department of Defense and replaced all of his medals, including his Purple Heart, and then presented him to a ceremony on Father's Day.
Oh, my, I love that so much.
Oh!
That's so great.
And, how many times have you had the honor of helping in something like that, Kevin?
Many times. It's one of the greatest joys of this job is to be able to get somebody's medals. A lot of the reason for that is that there was a major fire in one of the large facilities that holds a lot of the records, and so a lot of people's records had been lost. There's nothing quite like it, but to be able to present on a Father's Day, how special is that?
Unbelievable. Love the story. And Delilah, if you hang on, Kevin will chat with you, and we'll get your pick of a MyPillow or a pet bed or what else are we doing? Oh, Mike Lindell's book, which is really great as well. This is a big picture question, but somebody's asking me what you thought of Jerome Powell's comments related to inflation. He sort of is poo-pooing that inflation's any kind of a problem, and it's hard to believe with the brain power that James Powell has and his history of the Federal Reserve, that he wouldn't be going, even a little more cautious with his comments. Sounds like a cheerleader that inflation isn't a problem. What'd you make of that?
So Jay Powell is somebody that I have great respect for. I defended him a lot with former President Trump because, as you know, President Trump always wanted interest rates to be inverted. He liked negative interest rates. And I just felt like Jay Powell did a pretty good job of keeping politics out of his decision making. But he's very dovish, as they call it in the monetary side of things. And I'm concerned about it. And I've raised the concern. But just yesterday I did an interview on it with Sinclair Media. And I said, the only thing that surprised me that about Jay Powell saying, and the Federal Reserve saying, we may need to raise interest rates a little sooner than we thought, like maybe the last quarter of 2023, is I can't believe it took him this long to admit that this inflation thing is not a real short-term deal. I hope it's fairly short-term, but, you know, the idea that somehow because the shipping lanes are opening up, you know, the ports and things, and so the supply of materials is making its way through is going to cure inflation, I think, is folly, because you cannot have as much liquidity, cash, if you will, all this free money flowing through an economy while you still have a manufacturing backlog, you have workforce challenges. And by the way, these workforce challenges are going to be certainly reduced a little bit, relieved a little bit by the ending of unemployment insurance, you know, the extensions and expansions and whatnot. But we're still going to be short of labor. We've got a lot of work to do to figure out the labor challenge. So I personally, Scott, it's like a lot of major problems. Hoping for it to get better when you could be helping it get better is a very high risk. And the cost of a mistake a year from now is going to be a lot greater than just little recognitions today. Now, we're watching the stock market. I think the Dow Jones, you know, it's probably down 1,000 points this week as a result of these comments. The stock market's the least of my concerns. The cost of everything going up is way, way more difficult on our economy than what the stock market's going to do.
Appreciate that comment and question. Thank you. More coming up with Senator Kevin Cramer in the final segment here. Last chance to get in. Got a question related to critical race theory and whether there's any federal action that can be taken on that. Been a hot story of late. As well as a question about the controversy over Ashley Babbitt. Get to those and any others straight ahead with Senator Kevin Cramer on What's on Your Mind. Don't touch that dial. Again, last chance to get in for Senator Kevin Cramer in the final minutes here. Telephone number 258-0550 or email me, scotth@flagfamily.com. Text me 367-2054. Question regarding critical race theory. This has been a hot topic of late. Is there any federal backstop here?
I don't know, Scott, that there really is. You know, we particularly, well, there is some. Let me restate that. There is some when it comes to federal institutions. So things like the military. So Eric Martz asked about that earlier. And we do challenge the four stars on this all the time. It's very hard for them to answer it because they don't want to torque off the commander-in-chief. You can tell it's an uncomfortable topic for them. All of the Biden administration people that come before the committee often refer to the systemic racism in the military, and they've been challenged pretty hard on that. They've tamped down their rhetoric a little bit. So we can there. But with regard to education in general, that's really a state issue. We, as conservatives, believe it's a state issue. But I will say this, just as, you know, personal opinion. There is nothing good about critical race theory. And anybody that can dismiss it, validate it, rationalize it is wrong. It is anti-American. It is wrong in several ways. First of all, it is Marxist in its origins. It is based on the belief that Marx had that history determines everything going forward. That is not the American dream. The American dream is that your history does not determine things going forward. You get to. And it makes white children uncomfortable. It's designed to make them hate their country. It tells a lie about their country and about them. And it makes minority children believe that they live in a racist country, which they don't. This is not a systemic racist country. This is a country that has provided more opportunity for more people, which is why a million of them come every single year into the United States legally, and why hundreds of thousands of others come in illegally because it's the greatest country in the world.
I wish, with its flaws. Yeah, I wish it was as few as a few hundred thousand a year. I mean, you can count a million since Biden's taken office illegally at the border. This seems to me that we're just, there's so many things being thrown at us here that we're looking the other way. I've been to the border going back for President Trump's visit at the end of the month. I mean, it is breathtaking on how this is happening, and we just sort of go about our day. How does this movie end?
Well, remember that Joe Biden told them we have room for 2 million. That he campaigned on that promise that we have room for 2 million more illegal immigrants. Come on in. And then he acts surprised that they are. You know, that's what I can't get over. If you're going to push for illegal immigration and you're going to advocate for it and you're going to create policies to encourage it, at least stop pretending that you're surprised that it's happening. I mean, really, it's so dumb. I don't know how the movie ends. I think the movie ends with Democrats losing a lot of elections in the next midterm, quite honestly. But they're going to try to do as much damage as they can before then, and that seems to be the course that we're on. So we continue to stand up against it in every way that we can, including, by the way, doing exactly what you're doing, Scott, and doing what a lot of us are doing, and that is keep raising the issue and highlighting it, because this is exactly why neither Joe Biden or Kamala Harris will go to the border, because they don't want the American public to see the crisis at the border. They want to whitewash it. We have now, I think, something like 40% of our agents at the border are taking care of unaccompanied children. They're running daycares down there.
I am going to try and do this, I guess, by better judgment. We only have a minute left. Carry it up and go next for Senator Kramer, quickly.
Okay. Hi, Mr. Kramer. You said there's not a whole lot that can be done with on the federal level against this CRT. But since they're basically teaching children in schools that their skin color is a way to separate themselves and to identify themselves, doesn't that go against like the 1964 Civil Rights Act?
Civil Rights Act. Well, it is racist for sure, and this is why we need to keep raising that issue. Remember, today we're actually celebrating Juneteenth, which, by the way, Scott, interesting point. Of course, what this is a celebration of an accomplishment of the first Republican president. That is the end of slavery, and not just the end of slavery, but getting the message out to the very last slaves, black slaves in our country. And we need to keep telling the story that way. What I was talking about with regard to not a lot you can do at the federal level is at the education level. That is a state issue. There's no question. But I don't know if it's a violation of the Civil Rights Act. But you make a relevant point. Maybe there's something that can be done. Well, you know, the lumber issue has been going on for a long, long time. It just got really highlighted during the pandemic with the supply, you know, and a logistical nightmare. With regard to an investigation, we have a policy problem. We have a policy problem with Canada. Canada has tariff issues related, as probably the person that sent the question in knows. Let me check on it. We'll see if there's whether it's a USDA thing or a commerce thing, and whether there could be some sort of an investigation that's allowed the driving up of prices. You know, just because there's a crisis and just because there's some natural market movement a certain direction and price of things doesn't mean that there aren't others taking advantage of that to enhance the problem. So let me check on it, Scotty, and we'll see if there's any investigation in the works, and if not, if there's something we ought to be doing.
I'm going to piggyback on that because we're hearing from the, you know, rancher community in a great deal of duress right now with high you know, feed costs and also obviously everything that's going on in beef, that the antitrust situation is something they're hoping will get to the bottom of where we find ourselves with the limited slaughter capacity. Mike Rounds was on us this week. He is very, very much tiger on tail, or tiger on bone, dog on bone, whatever, that this is an antitrust situation. Do you agree it is? Is this an antitrust violation, and do we need to get to the bottom of that sooner rather than later?
So there's been an antitrust. You know, there are some states that have filed some antitrust issues. The Justice Department continues to look into possible antitrust problems. We are finally, Scotty, having a hearing on the issue, which is, and when I say we, I mean the United States Senate. I'm not on the Committee of Jurisdiction, but we've been trying to get this done for years. And as you know, the former chairman of the committee, Pat Roberts, retired last year, and now
Debbie Stabenow, the chair from Michigan, and John Bozeman, the ranking Republican, who's a very good friend of mine, a very good friend of Senator Hovind's. He's a ranking Republican on the committee. They have been, we've been talking to them a lot, shall we say, and they finally have agreed to, and I think even set a date now for a hearing, which just the transparency itself of this issue will make, I think, make a big difference. And we're starting to see some prices, by the way, pop up, but very, very minimal compared to the damage that's being done.
Thanks for the time. Have a good weekend. Good luck, Abel.
You bet. You too.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
God bless. Bye-bye. Take that.